Hey everyone, and welcome to Waiting to Be Signed, the show where we discuss the week's events in generative art. My name is Trinity, and I'm joined by Will, and before we get started, a quick disclaimer. We are here to talk about art, not just the aesthetics, but the money surrounding it, as the market is a key part of art on the blockchain. That said, nothing we say here should be taken as financial advice. It is for fun and conversation. You can follow us on Twitter at Waiting to Sign to keep up with our thoughts throughout the week, or on Farcaster at WTBS. For those who prefer visual language, on Instagram, at Waiting to Be Designed, and if you are feeling generous, we are always accepting donations, including tokens, at our crypto wallet addresses, wtbs.tez and wtbs.eth. The best way you can support the show is by becoming a patron on Patreon, patreon.com/waitingtobesigned, where you can use your real-world dollars to support two real-world people and potentially a new method. We'll talk about that in like probably 5 minutes.
Yeah.
Spoilers.
That's true. It's 2024. Crypto is warming up again. We're finding all new methods to potentially earn your support as a podcast. So should we just start there since it's connected to the donation segment?
Yeah, let's do that. And this is a person that you met on Farcaster.
Yes. So someone reached out from a Web3 podcasting platform called pods.media. They found us in the /podcast channel on Farcaster, and it didn't seem scammy. They had a real website, and we talked over Zoom twice, and it's pretty cool. You can use like Zora or ETHL1 or Basechain, which they just implemented, to upload your podcast and then allow people. It's very much like Highlight. So it's like there's a little fee, and then you can set the price to whatever you want. And if you set the price to zero, then you just split the fee with the platform. So we're going to try it out and see. You know, Basechain is very easy to transact on. It seems like more and more people are wrapping up ETH to collect on Base. There's a Farcaster frame, so you'll be able to mint easily through Farcaster, or you'll be able to go to the pods.media link. And we're going to try it out on the Snowfro interview episode from 2 weeks ago. It'll be live by the time this episode's out. So the link will be below in the show notes. You know, click through your podcasting app or find it on Twitter or on Farcaster. We'll be promoting it there. And for just the cost of gas and the platform fee, you can mint the episode. And we're just going to kind of gauge interest on it, you know?
Yeah, it seems like a lower effort way to support us through Web3 means. And there's a lot of really interesting stuff that it kind of enables, you know, whether it's giveaways. I don't know. Really, it's the start of something new and beautiful. I know that you have more vision for what we could do, but
yeah, I mean, so the biggest challenge is that since it's all on ETH and ETH wallets and the bulk of what we've collected is on Tezos, it's kind of hard for us to like daisy chain if you mint on ETH that we can give you something on Tez, because then we have the whole how to associate wallets problem. But we've collected some stuff on Base. So I kind of thought if this does well and people enjoy this, then maybe with every weekly episode, we can throw it out there for people to mint, maybe just 100 or 200 editions, nothing crazy. And anyone who mints one then gets entered into a giveaway for something from our collection. You know, so like we minted a bunch of Busos, right? So that seems like a great thing to give away. It was the Genesis base project on FX Hash. Maybe you missed it. Well, mint one of our episodes and we'll give it away. Not this Eric one. This Eric one is just going to be to see if anyone even engages with this thing at all. But after that, that seems like a way to do it, I think. So I don't know. Maybe it'll go nowhere. Maybe you guys won't like it. But I know that a lot of people said start a Patreon because donating through Web3 it's hard to remember. But perhaps if a frame that says mint the episode for $2 is right there, then maybe people will engage with that. We'll see. We'll give it a shot for maybe a couple of weeks.
Experimenting.
Yeah. And if it doesn't go anywhere, it's no big deal. We have the Patreon. We have people tipping DGen, but I feel like this is the year to try new things.
I agree. Why not?
So be on the lookout for that. And again, the link will be below if you want to go find the Eric Calderon, the Snowfro interview, and mint a copy for yourself.
Speaking of interviews, just again, housekeeping. This is probably like the most boring part of all of our episodes, but you know, we have to kind of shill ourselves a little bit. Latest interview with Jamie Gourlay just went up. But I thought it was a really great interview. I love talking to Jamie. He's just so thoughtful and also just has such a great perspective, I think, on the art space in particular, and also on the conjunction of art with Web3. So a really great counterpoint to the Snowfro interview. Mm-hmm. Maybe what we could do is we could put them in an like head to head, which one gets more mints.
Ooh, okay.
Mm.
We could try that, kind of a virtual face-off of sorts. That was such a fun episode to record. It's always great to talk to Jamie. And there's some alpha in there too, you know, about some trad artists that they have coming over and what's going on with Solana and stuff. So if you're kind of curious about what direction that platform is potentially heading in, take a listen. Very, very happy with that one. And we've got some cool episodes coming up too. So tomorrow we're getting up bright and early. Well, actually, our guest is getting up bright and early because they're in Australia. Rich Poole is going to be on with Rick Crane to talk about an upcoming collab that they have. So we're excited to record that. And then shortly after that, we'll be recording with someone we probably should have had on a long time ago. And as someone you're probably super excited about, Trinity.
Eric Swan.
Yes.
In which we will continue to learn why architects are some of the coolest artists around.
Yeah. The project has been announced for Eric, this upcoming Verse project. It's called Autoscope, and I believe it's hitting April 19th. So I guess we can put that, tuck that up here into the looking ahead for later, but we'll try to get the episode out for April 19th, Autoscope. And this one is interesting because it's animated.
Yeah, it's a new direction.
Yeah. So very excited to talk to Eric about that and how his work has just progressed from some of the earliest stuff that we've seen to this like same visual style, but now just becoming more and more, I don't know, abstract is not the word, but there's something really weird about this one that I mean, definitely curious to learn about.
This one's weird. Functor was weird. I think they're getting a little bit progressively weirder in many respects, but it's still also recognizably Eric, I would say, in the way things feel. Like, he's really developing a signature style, which I'm excited to talk about, even though I still love his earlier works. Like, Dissignatory is like,
oh yeah,
so good.
Very
underrated.
Cool.
That's the alpha for this episode. It is underrated. That is financial advice. I don't know.
No, go check out Eric's early FX Hash stuff for sure. Last bit of news. So the Processing Org announced a 2024 fellowship for sustaining community expansion access. It's a $10,000 stipend with, I guess, like a mentorship aspect. So if you're interested in applying for something like this, I'll link to the tweet below in case you missed it. But shout out to Raph DeCorville for making us aware of this. I had not noticed it. The announcement came out a couple of days ago. Very, very cool. I mean, if you're interested in getting involved in processing on a community side and get paid for it, I think take a look at this.
Yeah. I think just one more piece of news to shout out. And it's also around foundations. Tezos Foundation put out a tweet on, well, yesterday, just talking about the application process to get funding, you know, some really actually frank and open stats, which we always appreciate. But apparently the process to get funding is so overwhelming and difficult that less than 8% of applicants actually succeed in getting funding, even funding as little as like $1,000 or so. So what they're doing right now is they are closing the call for proposals just because, you know, the low success rate of applicants, which kind of feels like a weird way to message that you're just trying to improve the process and making sure that you're like focusing on getting like the right people through. But apparently it's supposed to be net positive announcement, just that they're being a little bit more tactical with how they're allocating funds.
Interesting. I mean, I know this is a point of contention amongst Tezos developers, how they basically get no support from the Tezos people broadly. You know, there's a distinction between Tezos the chain and Tezos Foundation and Trilotech. There's all these entities. Tezos broadly, it seems, has been really, really bad at supporting developers. And I remember the last time I listened to an Arthur B. Twitter Spaces, this point was brought up, and he basically said that the issue was that the proposals were just bad. So he didn't say the process for applying was bad. He said the proposals we get are just not good, so we don't fund them. So he kind of turned it back on the developers, which when you already have a frustrated community, I don't know if that's the move, but here we are. I guess they're revamping this process, and hopefully that will eventually free up some money for people to build on Tezos. That'd be great.
I don't know. I'm not going to say no to ensuring that better things are being built. I'm just curious as to, you know, the quality or what they're getting proposed for.
I don't know.
You know, I think that tender tried to apply and it was just so arduous that it just didn't happen. Yeah. And like, as we know, tender is very legit and real.
Very legit and could have used the money to get more devs and keep things going, you know, at a faster pace. So missed opportunity there. Arthur has not done those AMAs in a while, or at least none that have hit my radar. So he did like two and said he was going to keep doing them, but maybe he had better things to do than get yelled at by developers. I don't know.
I think being yelled at is a growth opportunity.
It is. Let's move on. It's going to be a short episode today. Let's announce the new patron of the week. I don't think we got any donations, but we did get a new patron. So big thanks to Pete M for joining the Patreon. Your support is massively appreciated. Thank you. Thank you. And that's it. Topics and trends, Trinity. It was NFT NYC this week. You got to do something really cool. Did you take the day off Wednesday? How did you manage it?
I took the day off work Wednesday. I also I had to take the day off work Tuesday because Nanny was sick last minute, like literally could not get out of bed. And so I was like, okay, shit. Mm-hmm. So I had two really fun days of walking around New York City. It's been torrentially downpouring all week. But then on Wednesday, I went to an awesome event that was hosted by MAFE. Thomas Noy and I, we were trying to figure out what it stood for. Mutant Apes Industrial Foundation, perhaps.
I'm guessing the middle letters stand for artificial intelligence.
I prefer Mutant Apes, but okay. Sure. During the day, they had a series of six panels that were both in person and also, you know, streamed via Twitter Space. They're still up there for people to listen to in posterity. I was asked to moderate one of the panels. I assume that you would have been asked, Will, except you have openly declared that you don't like AI art, which I feel like is a huge disqualifier from moderating panels on AI art.
Fair enough. I own myself there. That's fine.
Just wanted to throw that out there. But the panel that I got to run was so fun and so interesting. The subject was Machine God, Spirituality in AI Art, which A is like the most Sarah Lawrence panel that could possibly be. And I got to talk to three queer artists who all like deal with themes of like transmutation, queer culture, energy, psychology, spirituality, like the emotions, all of that stuff. And it was a great conversation, you know, just in terms of what is machine, what is the subconscious, what is the collective conscious, you know, how do we imbue our everyday life with rituals, and how do we kind of subvert all of our social expectations that the AI is kind of feeding back to us, and how do we kind of take that to A, either like submit to the will of the machine, or I guess in this case, God, or wield that energy like a hammer and like forge the reality that we wish to see in the world. So I don't know. I could have like led that panel for 2+ hours. We had 45 minutes.
Nice. That's awesome.
Yeah.
What was the best thing you asked? Like, what was your big home run question, Trinity?
The question that got the most engagement from the panelists was, you know, really around the concept of queer art, because everybody on the panel was queer. And when you're dealing with AI models of different training sets and different sizes and different ages, you know, you're really being told what is queer life, what is a queer person, that sort of thing. And, you know, how do you either lean into that or how do you subvert that in order to manifest the reality that you wish to see in the future? Because if you think about it from a very meta perspective, the images that people are creating around what is queer life or what are lived experiences that are not necessarily depicted in these training sets, you're creating these images that will be part of future training sets potentially. And so like there's very interesting like cyclical manifestation that becomes like possible through like this entire means. But conversely, you know, if we're thinking about things from like a shadow work and shadow side perspective, which is we have to face the things that we don't like or face the things that are like kind of negative, are we subverting the shadow work that we need to do as society? Is it important for us to face the stereotypes that might exist for, like, what does a gay man look like? You know what I mean?
We're trying to get Will and Grace out of the training data is what you're saying.
And or if we have Will and Grace in the training data, let's own that. And, like, let's own the fact that, you know, that's something that we as society has, we've determined that this is something that is, you know, valid for, like, the gay experience.
Awesome. Nice. Yeah. I feel like I could have moderated that panel. Maybe they should have put me in that one.
We can do round two. I mean, if we believe in multiverses.
Oh, yeah.
And also through AI, all universes are possible to exist at all times. True. We can do a rerun.
I'm so happy that you got to do that. And also that you got to get off work. And I imagine you stuck around for many of the panels too. So, like, what else stood out to you? Like, what else did you really enjoy listening in on?
There's a lot of interesting work or discussions around post photography. Danielle King was on that one, as well as Thomas Noya, who we know and love and released a really great post photography project this week. You know, I got to hear another panel. I forget what the theme of it was, but there was somebody from Botto on it. Adam was on it as well. It was really about curating AI art. And this is something that's, I think, would be interesting to talk to Adam about or anybody else within the art space, specifically when comparing AI art to other art methods to code-based art, is around the democratization of art. Adam made a really great point that art is already democratized in a way. You know, AI art obviously means if you want to make a photograph, you don't need to have a camera, you don't need to have a dark room. And anybody can go and take a piece of paper and a pencil and make art. Anybody can go forage things out of the trash or steal a shopping cart and put a garbage bag on top of it, which is apparently at either the Whitney or the MoMA right now. I forget which. And so that's super accessible. But AI art lets us create art that people think looks like art. But just like that comparison versus the really strong STEM and coding background that's required to make generative art, I think that they're just like going in like two different directions in terms of accessibility. Any thoughts on that?
I mean, I think that's a point to be celebrated and also a point to be critiqued, right? I mean, I think that's why AI art rubs a lot of people the wrong way. I don't know that it so much has to do with the people who are practicing and playing with this medium and experimenting as much as it has to do with like the way that collectors and price are like being attached to it. I think that is probably the friction point at the center of it all, which is like this thing is really young. A lot of people were able to pick it up really fast. Where is this idea of like this one is good, this one is not, this one's worth this much, this one is not? Like, where is that kind of deriving from? And I think we learned a lesson with generative art from a couple of years ago that it's not necessarily enough for it to be aesthetically driven work to sustain price for a long time or to make it meaningful. And so I don't dislike necessarily that people do it. I think there's just this painful transition period where the tools are really advanced, but the people who are evaluating it are not.
Yeah.
Same for generative art, though. You can say the same for generative art, I think, for the most part.
Definitely. And I think one of the things we've talked about a lot throughout the 2+ year history of this show is, you know, when it comes down to great execution, great aesthetics, but conceptually it might not hit, or conceptually this is really great, but it takes forever to load. So much of generative art from a code perspective is based off of or requiring a certain skill and a certain ability to execute well. But you also sometimes see generative art that kind of lacks soul, so to speak. And I think that's one of the reasons why everybody is like so jazzed about Barbarians over the last month or so, is because it kind of has the best of both. It has a narrative, it has a concept, it's beautiful to look at, and it's super well executed in code. And so, you know, I think that you do start to see kind of the cream rise to the top, so to speak. One of the other things that came out of that panel on curation, I forget who said it, was around the dangers of something like OpenSea, where you can find Torrent by Jerez, like on mm-hmm. OpenSea. Like Artblocks curated the top echelon of generative art in the space. But right next to Torrent, you could find a picture of somebody's butt crack.
Right.
I guess there's a kind of beauty in it, but it's kind of like eBay, which is the other analogy that they put, where you could find a 500-year-old porcelain vase, or you can buy like a 30-year-old bag of Cheetos. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
And who's to say which is more valuable?
Depends on how hungry you are. I don't even know if they made Cheetos 30 years ago. I guess they did.
Yeah, they did. It's the 90s.
Oh, that's the 90s. Oh, my God. That's the 90s.
It could have been like a rare Cheetos issued for a movie type of thing.
I don't think they did that back then. Like that sort of cross promotion.
Brand collabs? They did. I remember Universal Pictures was trying to do like a crossover with Doritos for all of the classic horror movies. So there was like a Frankenstein and a Creature from the Black Lagoon and stuff. So yeah, they were doing brand collabs back then. Just you had to actually see them in a store or in a theater because there was no social media to like get them in front of you.
Anyway, that was my NFT NYC.
Awesome.
I did not eat any Doritos. It would have been delicious though. I did learn that spicy margaritas are too spicy for Thomas Noya. You also went to an event on Monday, which was more gen art focused, I guess.
Yeah, it was a great last minute invite that came through to us. I know you couldn't make it, unfortunately. Just to like a, it wasn't a sponsored thing, you know, it was just kind of a bunch of artists said like, let's meet up before the event starts. There was actually another thing I really wanted to go to on Tuesday that now that I'm aware of it, I'm definitely going to try to go next year. A group called Token Art NYC that I guess for the last couple of years has been doing these like Tuesday seminar kind of gatherings. And so if you go to their Discord, they nominate topics and you have to like write a paragraph or so about like why you think this topic's important. And then people vote and then they'll pick like six or so of them and get a space. And then you can kind of just go sit in one area and talk and move to another one. And it's just kind of, it sounds again, very Sarah Lawrence-y, just like all these different groups broken out, talking about different things.
It's like a salon of sorts, I guess, rather than like a panel. Everybody is their own panel.
Yeah, exactly. And I don't know how long it was. It was probably a few hours, but that would have been so exciting to go to, and it would have made for a great recap episode. So next year. But the thing I went to is just a casual get-together, drinks, and got to see some people that we knew, meet some new people. You know, Thomas Noya came to that one. Haver was there. William Watkins was there, who we met last year briefly. I actually met like a really cool video game person who would be interesting to bring on later, but they're really well known for being one of the writers and developers behind this game called That Dragon Cancer, which is an indie game from like 8 or so years ago. That's really sad because him and his wife are game developers and they had a kid who was diagnosed with cancer and died. And then they made this whole game about that. And it was a really, I don't think it was like, it was really, really critically well received. It's not like it made $1 billion, but got to meet him and we chopped it up about games because, you know, I don't make those types of games, but I appreciate those types of games. And it was just very, very fun to get a night out, hang out, get some rum and cokes. Oh, Pronoia was there too. That was great. He was a great last minute attendee. He flew in that day. So just fun.
Solid group.
Yeah. No salon style discussions. No profound insights into God and the machine or anything like that. But I had a blast.
I think that maybe next year for token.art, they should do it in like either like a mock trial or global UN format. So that way you can win.
You can win? So competitive?
Specifically you can win.
Oh, I can win.
Yeah.
I love to win.
I know you do. Okay. And I think that you could win this if they made a game out of it.
Okay. Awesome. Well, you jump in there. I'll send you an invite to the Discord and feel free to suggest that.
Okay.
But yeah, that was it. Chill week. Next year we'll plan better. I should just take days off and assume that I'll fill them with events regardless. Yeah.
And day drinking and night drinking.
Exactly.
I got to meet some really great people from Tezos overall. Not the Tezos Foundation, but just from the Discords, like Fluffhead Chaser.
Oh, great.
Moogs, you know,
yeah,
was at the event. Hello. And some other listeners as well. So it's so fascinating putting face to names that to people that you only like know on Discord. Or like via the sales feed.
Yeah. That's like, so wow. Fun.
Yeah.
Oh, you know who I met was Cheyu Wu.
Oh, yeah. How was that?
It was great. We we got there and we were both awkwardly standing outside because the place we were meeting was really big and the host couldn't really help us figure out where we were supposed to go. Then a couple more people showed up and we didn't really talk about much. It was just like, hey, where are you from? How are you doing? What are you doing while you're here? Like, I shared him the list of events and I was like, yeah, like, you know, Soulfish and Soulsea, and just talking to him a little bit about that. But once we got inside, it kind of, you know, it's hard to keep track of people and everyone floats around. But it was just cool to like put a face to him. And he was pretty fashionable guy too. Got a shout out. That. He was looking good.
Something to aspire to.
Yeah. Well, that's basically it. It was a pretty uneventful, more eventful for you, but overall less eventful than last year, I would say, right? Because last year we were tearing it up with the Zancan event. We had a cool dinner to go to and live minting experiences. So maybe next year will be a little more exciting.
Once we're back in the full bull run, it'll be great. Yeah. I know that we wanted to keep this episode short. I'm sure the people at home want us to keep this episode short because they have things to do rather than listen to this podcast. But I don't know if you heard any follow-ups from our Warpcast conversation from last week and the yays or nays.
No critiques or
just great conversation.
I mean, I've seen some people in Discord. I don't know if it's because of our episode, but I think more and more people are getting interested in the Tender Discord and joining. A lot of questions being asked that could have been answered by listening to the episode. And yeah, definitely have noticed a lot more people joining. Our follower count continues to grow. We're at over 1200 now. So it's getting actually like pretty comparable to Twitter. Still having fun giving away DGen, having fun getting tipped DGen. You're finally tipping DGen, right? Like, what's your follow-up experience been like this week? Or have you been too busy to really?
I've experienced it a little bit more. There are some things about it being a smaller community that where it feels less like pressure to put out like high quality posts, so to speak. Because I think in the first few days that I was using it, I was like, okay, I need to get to 10,000 DGen, or like, I just want to get DGen. But then I realized that nobody was really tipping DGen out. The number of posts that get DGen overall are pretty low. But thanks to you airdropping me some DGen to put me well over the threshold, it's also like I can tip out 140 DGen the day after I have a good day of engagement. If I don't post anything, it goes down to 80. Which feels so inconsequential. I still don't think that it's viable long-term. However, if it's a way for creators or artists or whomever to make a ton of money, like alongside these crypto influencers who are using this to also make themselves a ton of money, then great. I'm not going to be against that. However, I highly doubt the longevity of this platform, but I think it's important for people who are quote unquote early to make the best of it while they can and support the people that they like while they can for no cost. I guess that's where I'm at right now. I was feeling better about it, but then I felt worse about it when I realized that they have you auto follow a bunch of crypto influencers. And I was like, feels weird.
I spend more time in channels than on my home feed.
Yeah.
So
my home feed was just kind of like, who the hell is this guy talking about like building? Like,
right. Now that I go to my profile, my home feed, I see I'm following some people who I don't know if I followed them early on just because they were people to follow or if I was auto following them.
It kind of feels like the fix is in some respects, like, you know, with the early influencers who have hundreds of thousands of followers. It's like, these people are getting a ton of DGen and they're going to cash out. It's a money making scheme.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I think every meme coin starts out as a money-making scheme.
Of course.
My interest in it was not so much in DGen, although I do think DGen in this moment presents a really interesting opportunity for creators. It's amazing what a difference 6 weeks makes in the earliness of it. Like if you had come in at the same time, you know, like our account, we get to give out over 2,000 DGen a day. You know, that's because we've hit a certain number of followers and we get like decent likes and recasts on things that we post. And I'm sure that like the waiting to be signed account gets tipped more often than you do as well. Just having more followers, right? The more people who see your content, the more people who will tip it. So
yeah,
I think you remember like it was what, like 2 months ago when I got on and I was just like chronicling like, oh, we're just trying to grind to 300. We're just trying to get the follower count up. And no one was even tipping me DGen back then, even though I think they could have been. So it was kind of right place, right time. I do think there's a lot of potential for this tipping model to be looked at and used elsewhere. But as for degen, I think the best case scenario is that they've hit like a critical mass. People have put in money. There's like the coin price keeps, it's gone up since the last time we talked about it. It was like 2.5 cents. It hit a high of almost 6 cents. It's back down to around 4 cents. It's been going back and forth between 4 and like 5 this week. So if you're earning it for free, you know, cash out some, hold the rest, see if it goes truly degen, and then cash out at a really high number. Like I actually cashed out a tiny bit this week. Not a tiny bit. I cashed out like $800 this week. But just because I was like, well, the coin's at 5 cents. It could all go away in a couple of weeks very quickly. So might as well get some money out, but then keep a good chunk in there to just be like, hey, if it goes to a dollar, that's pretty sick, right? I don't know that it can, but that would be wild.
I guess if it's going to be used as a like a utility coin or something that's, I forget what, because I forgot already, something about securing an L3 and just, you know, being used for something there, then theoretically it could go up if the L3 is like truly viable in any way.
If they built like a DeFi thing on the L3, or the L3 was secured by DeGen and then people start staking it and getting yield with it, that's going to take a lot out of circulation. I think that's like the dream scenario.
Yeah.
Right. Is that we're still in that like early days. So much of it's still getting airdropped and proliferated for free that eventually once it all starts getting locked up and held, then the price is going to go up. But again, like I don't, for me, the whole point of talking about it wasn't even to say like, go buy some.
Yeah.
It was more like, hey, go experience this and like take a look at this model. It feels like it has so much potential, even if this is not the best expression of it. But I'm not mad at the degen we have. I think that's
absolutely
great.
Not.
And we're not discouraging anyone from tipping us at all. And I do love tipping out every day. So,
yeah. I guess I'm like just curious, like if we think about, you know, social media or even games or any sort of platform, you know, where there is a user acquisition cost. And a lot of that user acquisition cost goes into marketing or whatever sorts of targeting there is in order to get people into the platform. I'm just curious as to if they put those funds into something that is truly like peer-to-peer self-funding, and that the user acquisition cost is literally just giving people money to give to other people.
Mm.
You know, I'm wondering what is the net-net on that from an ROI perspective? How much money have they given each person that is currently using the platform? I don't know.
That's a good question. You'd have to look at the breakdown, but they hit something here and they created a lot of value with this degen thing. Again, not the developers of Warpcast, but like this group within it who run the token. It's been a hugely positive for the protocol, I think, for sure. So Warpcast, actually, the thing that we forgot to mention last time is that they have their own little token called Warps. And that's what you use to start channels. And you can also use them to tip people. Did you know? But people don't really use them as much. Or if they do, they're very reticent to do so because the only way to get Warps is to buy them. You get gifted like 100 for joining or 50 for joining. And then after that, you have to buy them to give them out. And, you know, we've gotten a few people who have like tipped us 50 or 100 here and there, but nothing very meaningful. And there's no way to, if there is a way to back them out to USDC or ETH, I don't know what it is. So yeah, I think it just kind of goes to show that like you need to have that free, you need to have that kind of like, here's your thing, go give it away, go interact and be rewarded for interacting. And not this like spend $20 to get some warps to go give to people. That's clearly not working for them. Or that's been superseded by this degen model.
Yeah. Sorry, I'm just trying to do some quick research on the acquisition cost for like Twitter. But that data is not available according to ChatGPT.
So. That's probably hard to find.
Yeah.
I mean, we kind of talked about this in the Etherlink episode, right? Where networks that do these airdrops are sometimes spending hundreds, if not thousands of dollars to acquire a user who doesn't even stick around.
Yeah.
This is a little different, right? Because this is like a token that was not really designed to bring people into Farcaster, but it has had that effect for sure, because now it's become, you know, I think it's like the meme coin du jour on Base. So even though most of the meme coin stuff happens on Solana, there's certainly some people who are coming over here and checking out the network to experience this and earn it, gamble with it. But yeah, I don't know. It doesn't seem like they really had much cost because they're not associated with Farcaster.
Not directly associated with Farcaster. I'm sure they know each other.
I'm sure they do now, for sure. Yeah.
Yeah.
All right, let's do some quick art and wrap this one up. Trinity, you've got some bids out. What are you bidding on as prices continue to decline?
Yeah, I mean, I was just, you know, chatting with a tender member. I will keep them anonymous, but in terms of like what they've been doing from a bidding perspective and just, you know, throwing things out there in like the 25 to 30% of floor cost range. And, you know, there are some pieces and some collections that I really like to have at some point. So, you know, I've put out a couple of bids on Concord.
Nice.
By Rev Dancat, which I love. Also some low bids on A Strange and Desolate Place, which is, you know, that same very plottable work by Dan. And those are projects that have always like have captivated me for 2 years now. So, you know, why not try to get them? They're very attainable. And I guess I could just buy them outright, but, you know, why not try the bidding thing to see what works, what doesn't work?
You might really surprise yourself. I mean, we see incredible bids getting accepted every day. Mm-hmm. And every time I see some piece go like that, where you're like,
I would have bought that for more. Yeah.
Yeah. Or it's like, that just sold for 5 tes. I thought it was like 50 tes. If you had just told me, oh, buy this for 20, I would have like bought it, no questions asked. You know, like, yeah. I wish there was some service that was like, this person's ready to sell. But the only answer is you have to have bids in.
Yeah.
Right. You have to have offers in and be ahead of those people who are ready to let go at insane prices. Like, Loom is one that I've got my eye on, though I don't have bids in.
Loom just sold for 150.
I know. That's why I'm like, oh, shoot. I should get a real low ball bid in. Because even if it's not my favorite one, like, that's just a price I never thought we would see.
I also have some bids out for FX Hash Generative Logo, which is nice. Project Zero.
Mm-hmm.
Why not own that piece of history, even if RGB is the squiggle? Like, is it really the squiggle? It's maybe it's FX Hash Generative Logo.
I know at least one person who agrees with you on that. Okay, art. We've been talking about it for a while. It finally came out. Total Recall, all clear. Thomas Noya, AI, Verse, Tender, Adam. So many parties involved in this one, but Thomas is at the center of it. We each have an artist proof from a while ago that we got.
Yeah.
And the project itself that went up with NFTs was 50 pieces of these crazy, erotic, manglecore, Tom Cruise-ish. I mean, they are, right?
It is Tom Cruise. Literally, and I chatted with Thomas about this, you know, he didn't even train any models on Tom Cruise. It's just Tom Cruise is one of the most photographed people on the planet. And so it's just, if you ask for Tom Cruise in Stable Diffusion 1.5 data set, it's like, yes, we actually know who Tom Cruise is. And yes, we can give Tom Cruise like hands and feet.
And sometimes not in the places you expect them to be.
Exactly. Which is so sexy.
I think this is an example of an AI project where like I really kind of got it from the beginning.
What is your interpretation of this and how does it make you feel? We haven't talked about that.
The things I see in this that like stood out to me immediately are kind of the combination between like the idea of celebrity, paparazzi and voyeurism, right? The fact that he is so photographed that you can prompt up his image without any kind of training, I think is like core to this project, combined with the fact that they're doing like these nudes and there's this kind of homoerotic aspect to it, which I think plays into some of the rumors about Tom Cruise and the idea that you'd be photographing him doing something. And it's like, so I think there's just thematically a lot going on with this one that, at least for me, it lights up because like I can identify easily a lot of things here that I think Thomas is trying to bring out. But what do you think?
I would say a lot of the same things. And, you know, obviously, like there's that lens of like the impossible kind of stereo, not the impossible stereotypes, but the impossible body image things that society puts on men. We also often talk about like what it means for women in terms of like having like the perfect hair, the perfect makeup, the perfect whatever. But obviously, it applies at least as equally as men to men. And, you know, also reading through the project description, there's also very much that it's shot in the same way like of like Calvin Klein ads from like the 90s and perfume ads. And mm-hmm. So like there's this very editorial feel in some respects, which kind of plays further into that sense of celebrity.
It just feels like it all came together thematically in such a fantastic way. And then it also just like at the very, very high level, you just look at them and you're like, these are also really funny.
Yeah. Just over the top. It's just ridiculous.
Yeah. Like number three here, owned by Sean Yost, has like this like centaur kind of vibe to it. The way that the one torso is like kind of attached to this like big limb. And some of them form these really funny shapes. There's a lot of things going on where arms might be confused with other body parts, some phallic stuff. I know that that's always right in your wheelhouse, Trinity. But you kind of look at that, and at first you laugh, and then you're like, oh, hell yeah, that's really good. Yeah. You know? So kudos to Thomas on this. We both got outbid by $1 on the actual auction. It went way too cheap, in my opinion.
Given that some of the other ones have gone for hundreds, I think this is maybe in some ways more subtle. Like, it's weird to call this subtle. You know what I mean?
It's not subtle. Yeah.
It's like very in your face, but like compared to like the Los Angeles project from last week, it is a little like more understated, at least in terms of the overall look and feel. So, I mean, I'm excited to use this as episode art. Also, posting about this got Tender shadow banned on Twitter.
Oh, interesting.
I was like asking Adam, like, I was trying to tag you in this thing last week, like on Twitter, it wouldn't let me tag you. And yeah, they got shadow banned for promoting this piece.
Whatever algorithm is looking at tweets reads it as nudity.
Potentially.
Which it is, technically, I guess.
I mean, is it like you can't even search for Tender on Twitter right now. It just doesn't show up.
Oh, they're still shadow banned.
Yeah. You have to not do anything for 3 days.
Oops. That's okay. It gives Adam a break. I'll definitely make one of these the episode art for the week. I still treasure the one that I have. I wish I had gotten an NFT. If I had known, it would have just taken 101. I would have bid 102. No questions asked.
Yeah. Well, you can always throw out an offer.
That's true. I might. Only six listed. The lowest is 179. We'll see.
Yeah. Just put an offer out there. See what happens.
And that was kind of it. It was a very slow week for art. I think a lot of artists probably didn't time their releases for a while. NFT NYC was happening. Not too much really popped up on other platforms that I registered. So should we just do some looking ahead and wrap it up? What did you have here, Trinity?
So I was looking through the upcoming feed on FX Hash, and amid all of the like slightly Marxist AI illustrations that they have coming up, which I'm not super excited about. One of the OG artists from FX Hash 1098 has a project called Pulled Strings, which is a params project. You know, I clicked into it thinking like, sure, whatever. But then I went and actually played with it a little bit. It's one of those ones that has like a slightly different params interface.
Mm.
Instead of like actually potting something or like drawing something, it's more of like a clicked interface to like place things where you want them to be. And then the algorithm, depending on what other params are set, you can pull one end of the string, or you can pull both ends of the string. And as the string is pulled, light and color get pulled alongside of it to create these really cool shapes and shadows and colors in like a pseudo 3D aspect. It's just really neat and also just really, really nice to look at. So I'm going to shout this out for cool params, cool project. It comes out
in 2 weeks.
Oh, in 2 weeks. So we could talk about it again next week, looking ahead. But it's also just 6 TEZ, which is kind of that sweet spot.
Yeah.
Even though we know that all of these param tickets will probably go unclaimed because minting
who has time to mint their params? Yeah,
is hard.
This is one I'll take a look at for sure. Thank you for bringing it up.
Of course.
I'm hitting random on it right now, and the ones I'm getting are not that cool. So I take it this is probably one of those projects where you really do have to play with the params to make it sing.
It's an interesting, different take on params. And I think it's, you know, again, one of those things that's tastefully done, and there is concept here. So,
all right. Well, the other thing that we should be looking ahead to, so in addition to collecting the first episode we're putting up on pods.media, again, link below, I think our collab with White Cross, with Alessandro, is finally going to release this week. It's going to be on Base Chain, on FX Hash, and they're just finishing up getting a frame ready so that it can be minted through Farcaster as well. So we've kind of been waiting with that so that we can post and people can mint directly through the platform, as well as minting from FX Hash, of course. So fingers crossed that it works. It could be out this week. Obviously, we'll announce it on socials too, but just giving everyone a heads up who's listening to be on the lookout for that. And if the frame's not ready, we'll wait another week or something, but just letting everyone know to be on the lookout. It's thematically, basically where we ended up was just the features are named after things that have to do with the podcast. Some of the other ideas that we had just were too difficult to execute, but Alessandro was really gracious and wanted to continue to do the project with us anyways. And so it's just basically like a really nice white cross piece that has some of our flair on some of the naming of the palettes and stuff. So very cool. You play with the generator. You've seen it. It's a nice
it's
one.
Cool.
Yeah.
I love White Cross.
Of course.
And White Cross in all of the different forms that White Cross appears. There's so many different like styles, you know, and they're all great.
Be on the lookout. And I think that wraps it up. So let's say thank you to the patrons. Shout out to our patrons. Thank you to Melissa Wiederet, Nat Emoti, Verse, FX Hash, Anders, Charlie Middleton, Dan Cat, Dirtus, EGS 5000, Jairus, Michael Anthony, Mike G, Operating System, Otoro, Abstractment, Raugo, Ruxan, Sean Yost, and Tender. Thank you all for your support. It's amazing. Thank you for everyone who supports us in every which way. Trinity, I'll see you tomorrow for interviews.
Rich and Rick, let's go.
Rich and Rick, let's go. All right. That's it for this one. Later, everybody. Bye.